Okay. We are starting a raise, and so you want to download the one that says Array Group First, okay, if you want to follow along. Okay, so this is just your very basic array, like it is in all the other languages. This time it's got square brackets, and that's the big thing you have to remember is square brackets versus round brackets, or regular parentheses. So I've got department name 0, department name 1, department name 2, department name 3. And notice I just set up the array. I didn't tell it that I was setting up the array, which in most languages you do. And so then I said for count equals 0, while it's less than 3, count plus plus, which again is the same as saying count equals count plus 1. And then I wrote out department count, and then the department name that count is pointing to. So I have just the very basic array there. That's terrible, I can't remember the name of the one I want next. Well, I'll just go in sequence in that case. Okay, actually, that will work. Because what I wanted was an example of this is the other way that you could build an array. So, in this case, I've set up department name equals the name of the array. And I've said it can include women's, men's, girls, boys. And for each department name as the name. Okay, so I say with the for each, which is true in other languages as well, inside the parentheses, sometimes the name of the array is second and the thing that you're going after is first. Sometimes it's the reverse. But I'm basically saying, here's the array, department array, and each element as you go through it will have the name. So each element as you go through is called the name, and I'm saying for each, which means it goes through each element of the array. Okay? And then down below, so this one is just to show it, I put in an echo of department name 0 down below so that you can see that. Okay, put the for each went through and wrote out department equals, and then as I said, the name gets the name of the current one when you go through the for each. Okay? So if I go back and bring up that first one I looked at, so those are the two ways that you can set it up. Okay. So on the first one, I just use the department name as I was setting up with the things to go after it. And this one, I'm using the word array, and this time I'm using parentheses. Okay. However, when I go after an individual record, I still use the square brackets. So the square brackets are still used for the individual record. In the for each, I let it control things, so I don't have to put the index in. It's controlling the things. And it is saying that the whole array is called department name, and each individual one is called the name, and it loops through each one in the record. So obviously the for each does can be used in either one. I can go through and little individual things can be pulled out with each one. Okay, this one I did not want department zero to be anything, so I have it as an invalid because I have to account for the department zero. So all I did was throw in there the invalid, and I also made this part of a list. So I set up the UL, then I did the for each, which gives me all the LIs, and then I did a print of the UL. And again, you can use print or you can use execute. I mean, yeah, right, echo. I knew it started with E. So this one was so by setting it up in the list, that's all the difference that I've made is I've set it up and I've got the list going. And if I use an OL, then I can do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's kind of nice the way you can basically throw in HTML into the PHP, so that you get all of the features that HTML has to offer within the PHP. This one I've got a get, so that means that I have another program that is calling it. Okay, so I've got an array set up, and I'm getting the department number, so it's coming in from someplace else. And then I'm echoing out the department number and getting the department name. Okay, so when I see the get, and I don't see anything down below that is providing that, then I know that I've got something that I need to go look for. So that one was array function. Okay, and I'm looking for an HTML, would be nice to do. Okay, so that is calling it. So I am then calling this. The form action is to go there. The method is to get. I'm going to send the department number, and I've got a submit button that's going to bring it up. So this is going to go in, and it's going to, if I can find it, call MGB array function. Okay, so I'm going in and sending it and bringing the things in and then just doing an echo, which brings it all out. And if I look at this, the one that I want to bring up first is the HTML, which is call send array function dot html. Okay, so I come up now with the department and I put in department 2 and tell it to submit, and it comes back and tells me that department 2 is girls. Yeah.
What if you put a sign that's like
Department
10?
Okay. Yep. Let's try it. Okay. So it gives you an error, but the interesting thing is PHP really tries. And so it gives you the path that it could give you up there. As opposed to, and we're going to see that in a couple of minutes, there's a couple of examples, whereby it actually gives it its best shot, but it can't go all the way. So undefined offset, which means the index doesn't work. And I think that is this is kind of an interesting one. This one is letting you, this is without. Okay, so that works fine. Even though I didn't put any numbers in here, okay, it will work. And I can go down and say for count, and I can run count, and it makes the assumption that I'm going 0, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so it makes that assumption. Hi.
Hello, Professor.
How are you?
Not bad. Teaching class right now?
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, why don't you, are you guys coming at 9 o'clock, at 11, able to come? No. They're coming in to talk to my 9:30, to my 11 o'clock class, a bunch of alumna. But he's working in web development.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop for a few minutes and then we'll go back. But why don't you, because these guys are taking PHP. That's what we're looking at now.
Cool.
So why don't you talk for a few minutes to them?
Yeah, sure.
And tell them about what you do and that sort of thing, because he's the main one that's coming, I think, at that point that does web development. So tell them a little bit about your job.
Sure. You want me to say right here? Yeah, you're still teaching. Have you started doing anything with Node?
A little. Some of the people are.
I can help you with the syllabus.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're just gonna. I I got to set aside some time, but I can come.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, so I work for Fidelity Investments. I got my associates here at BCC. And the reason why I think we have Priscilla has me on is that I can help answer some questions that you might have. Because I remember when I came here, I didn't know what was going to happen after. Like, I got my degree, I kind of, you know, I had no idea. So now I've been, like, going on 7 years, a little 7 years in the profession. And it's been a long time. And so I got my associates here, and that was pretty much the only high-level education I had. I was, like, the first one in the family to get a college degree. But now my sister's beating me to it. She's graduating from Tufts Dental University, so
okay.
I'm very proud of her. So when I graduated, I started here in East Providence through someone was interested in, you know, getting some young talent to work for them, like at a company in East Providence. And I started kind of like just working on HTML and CSS and making things pretty. And then like a few months after that, like 8 or 9 months into it, I wanted something more challenging, so I joined this design agency, and then I was doing like mostly front end, like very heavy DOM manipulation, like jQuery and stuff. And then that got me into the JavaScript, you know, single page frameworks, the SPA frameworks as we call it, the single page applications. And I started working with Backbone, and that was really like an eye opener for me. Because it was like very object-oriented way of structuring code with JavaScript. So I did that for a couple of years. But it was like very kind of, I work with a small team of developers. I wanted to join something a little more serious, like in the engineering aspect of it. So I joined the startup in Boston. And then that was really a lot of work. I was the only front end guy building like the entire front end application, and it was all like a single page application. So a lot of the business aspect that used to live within the server now, you know, live within the front end. And then I learned a lot there because I worked with like some really experienced engineers and guys who had like led teams for a while. So I learned a lot there. That was a good experience. But they worked with Java, and I was never. I mean, I went into that job thinking, oh, I'm going to learn Java, and like I learned that I hate Java. I think she's heard me say this. And so I was like, nope, I'm not. Eventually they started transitioning me into more back-end work, and then I was just like, nope. And then, so after that, I wanted to get more into like the back-end. I wanted to do more Node.js, because it just kind of pulled me in. I was really interested in it. And then, so I was able to get this gig at Fidelity. At that time, I was contracting, but I was building an internal application, like back-end and front-end. So I was really excited about that because I was able to do everything. But then now, it's been a year, I joined what it's called the cognitive team, which is, I don't even know how to explain what cognitive is. But I joined the cognitive team at Fidelity. And what we basically do is, like, we try to build what we call virtual assistants. So we leverage like multiple channels, like Alexa, Amazon Lex, that's our biggest one. So we build like conversations, and we build bots. And then, so we build these bots, we leverage different technologies, like Nuance. And so we're not like heavy in the NLP and LU, we just kind of just leverage those tools. And then we make these experiences accessible through different channels like iMessage, Alexa, right, the web, like in the chat, right, and Google Assistant, like you name it, we're trying to get in it. Facebook Messenger. So, and then what we're really doing is we're trying to give the people within the company a space, a website where they can create these bots and these conversations. And then we also allow them to deploy into these different channels. And then currently now I'm working on what we call the conversation service, which is like the main back-end service that handles all the NLP, NLU, and the distinction between the different services, the third-party services that we use, like Nuance or Lex, or eventually we're going to also use more of Google Assistant to do the NLP unit, NLU for us. Because what these companies do, like Google and Amazon, they provide you like with the Google Assistant or the Amazon Echo, and that's just the channel, right? But then they also have a service in the back end that does all the NLU and NLP. And
define.
Then,
define.
So NLU is natural language processing, and NLP is natural language processing. NLU is natural language understanding. And then, so these big companies, they put a lot of time and effort and a lot of money and a lot of smart people to work on these engines, and then we leverage those engines, and they also make it accessible by creating like third-party APIs so that other people can go and create these, you know, make use of their APIs in order to construct these virtual assistants or bots. So that's what we're trying to do, my team's trying to do. We have our own service, and we're trying to leverage these third parties and then make them accessible to our internal partners. And at the same time, there's a lot of code that's involved with all, managing all of that. And the reason why we're doing that is mainly to obviously automate a lot of these things and give more power to the customer so that they're able to do a lot of simple things within, like, their phone, you know, or in the web, in the chat, and only have, like, call reps really deal with complicated issues, right? But at any point within the conversation that they have in robot, they say, I would like to speak to a representative, and kind of escalate that to a real person. So that's...
A smarter bot.
Yes.
Yeah, a smarter bot, yeah. But they save a lot of money, especially at Fidelity, because it's like, they're, you know, we're in a complicated business. I have to call them when I need help, you know, with my phone cave or things like that, because it's just so complicated. So, so it is, like, in a way, we do save a lot of time and money, and then have those people really focus on what, like, is necessary, right? Because a lot of these things now we're trying to move the simple tasks from the call representative to a more automated way that can be handled by a bot. And then the other reason why we have to build this in-house is because these other companies, they don't have access to our APIs and things of that nature. So we don't want to share that kind of information, right? Or access to any of those things. So we kind of have to build it in-house. It's been pretty cool. It's a lot of work, though. One thing that I can say is, like, once you go after that challenge, it only gets, you know, more and more complicated, and you spend more and more time from the screen. That's what's been happening to me. So,
but you seem to still enjoy it.
No, I love it, but it's like, yeah, it's just worrisome. It's like I'm starting to like, oh, what if I have a kid or start a family, and then things get really complicated. But, it just, now, like, ever since I joined that team, I used to work a lot before, but now I feel like it's been taking a lot of me, so, but it's okay. It's part of, you know. Part of the journey is, you always know when it's too much to start burning out. There is such a thing, yeah, a little, but so I started here too. PHP, MySQL, right? I love this class. This was like one of my first classes.
Was it?
Yeah, because you actually interact with a database, you're actually doing data manipulation.
Right. No, we just kind of wrapped up the beginning parts of the database, and now we're just starting arrays today.
Yeah.
So, anybody got questions?
I'm just curious on, like, what's one of your days? Like, you walk into work, and what is it like for you?
Sure. So, So, basically, in software development, if you go to a place that's well-managed, you're going to be using the Agile Scrum methodology. And you're going to be using tools that help you with that sort of way of maintaining work and maintaining the product backlog, what we call the sprint backlog. So the sprint backlog is what you're currently working on. And then the product backlog is like all the work that needs to be done in like that quarter, prioritized, right? But then it can always change, right? Because Agile, that's the whole point of changing. So what happens is you come in, when you start what we call a sprint, it's a 2 weeks sprint. So you have 2 weeks to kind of finish, complete the stories that you assign for, and you size them in a way that you think you can complete within 2 weeks, right? You can have multiple stories. So what we do is we work on stories, and the stories, we have 8 points within two weeks sprint. So a point is like equivalent to a day, right, worth of work. And the reason why we do 8 instead of 10 is because you have meetings and you have everything else. So ideally, so now I'm working on an 8-point story. So that means that I have the whole, like all 2 weeks to complete that story. So I come in. What I do is when I work on that story, I work.
Define story a little better.
The story is the work. Like the work that you have to do, the task. Right. So, like, if that story has the proper description and requirements and acceptance criteria, then I'm able to work on that story. So I start working on that story. And then what I do is, you know, you just write code, you program it, and then you write the tests. Or you can write the tests before, and then... actually, I shouldn't say that. So you should never write the test after. You should either do it parallel as you're writing the code, or before. But before is tough. Like, that's the old school. Like, some guys can do that. I can't do that. I can write the test first. So I write the test. You should do it in parallel, because when you're writing a function, you can automatically just write the test for that function in hand.
But what about the things you forget?
What do you mean?
Well, that you forget that you have to test for something, or...
Right, so we have tasks as part of the build. So even right now, so we use what is called Git in order to do source control. Source control is like when you have your code and you have five people working on a code base, and they're all adding code to that code base, right? So we use what's called Git in order to check your code in and commit to a particular branch. And then, so as part of the development process, we have what we call pre-commit hooks, that once you're going to check that code in, it's going to execute a bunch of tasks. And then these tasks are going to link the code, fix what, you know. So based on rules that you have, like this should be 4 tabs. But it does that automatically for you. So I could go in and mess up the whole code, and then I run this. When I commit the code, it runs these tasks that cleans the code for me. And then execute the tests, and then it tells me the coverage. So I can see... There are tools, like it's called Istanbul, it works with Node. It tells you exactly where you're missing tests, where like your code is not covered. So, and then there's, it breaks it down into 4 categories, like functions, and then branches, and then I forget the other two. But branches are the most important ones, because in the testing coverage, because branches actually test everything. Like it tests your error, your default values. And so you can see this, like it spits out a coverage report, and then you can kind of look exactly where it's missing, and it even tells you the percentage of the code that's actually being, how well you're covering the test, right? It gives you a percentage. So what we did recently, we had people checking in code and they weren't writing tests, and that was becoming a problem because we started the year like 90% coverage, and then we got down to 70. So I added a task on the pre-commit hook that basically tells you, like, if you don't meet this threshold, we set it at a percentage value, but we've been increasing since then. So if you don't meet that testing threshold, you can't commit your code into the code base. So basically kind of forcing everyone to write tests. So it all depends. Like, I only really started writing a lot of tests now. It all depends on which job you are. But when you work with like a very disciplined like lead and team, and obviously if you work in a serious like code base, like it has to work really well, you're gonna have to write tests. There's no way around it. Tests are really important, especially when you have more than one person working on the code base. Because when it's one person, you kind of know where things are, and it all depends. Like, if you're one person writing a lot of code, if you write tests, it's gonna kind of get in the way of your production. But when you're working, as soon as you have two people in code base, you gotta write tests, because you know right away, like, move one thing, and if that's not passing that testing criteria, you throw errors, and then you gotta go see what happened. It's better. The reason why it's so necessary is because it will fail right away, and then you will have a lot less surprises at runtime. Because you don't want to find bugs at runtime. You want to find bugs before you push your code to production. And then there's like, so then we create pipelines too. So as you commit, everyone commits code. At some point, it triggers like a build, and then it goes through like a bunch of steps, right? So we do. So the same things that kind of happen in your pre-commit hooks, they also happen in the pipeline. But then also there are additional steps that do like regression tests and end-to-end tests. And then if everything goes green, then it gets published. There's a huge process in place. And then it gets really tricky because sometimes things are failing and then you don't know why, and then you're new to the code base and then you gotta call that guy. And then, so as you ease in to the code base, you start learning all these things. And then at some point, you understand the whole aspect. I'm all about, like, what happens is sometimes you go to work with a team that does everything manually, and that is a big problem. Like, I always say this, it's like, we're all programmers, right? We're all writing code to automate things. Like, why are we having manual steps? Like, you know, this just doesn't make any sense. So the more automated your whole thing is, the better off you are. Meaning, like, it's all about developer experience. So it's like, it should be easy for me to check in code. It should be easy for me to write tests. And it should be easy for me to check my changes and then make it into an environment where I can test that and share it with other team members. This is where this is where my thing is, right? Go check it out, you know what I mean? So I'm all about the continuous integration, right?
But you didn't do that in your first few jobs, I'm assuming?
No. Because I learned a lot, like here when you come into school, you learn a lot of the basics. But when you go into the workforce, then again, it all depends where you're working, who you're working with. And you learn from those around you, you learn from disciplined people. I learned a lot. Like, I learned what I didn't like to work with. I learned what I like to work with. I learned how to, like, properly write code in such a way that's maintainable. Because a lot of people, it's like, they say a lot of things, like, sometimes they don't like, I've noticed this a lot in my career, it's like, they're always, like, looking for the new shiny thing, and then sometimes, most of the time there's other reasons as to why they're doing that. It's because sometimes the lead just wants to show off a new shiny thing. But the reason, there are underlying reasons as to why they're choosing a new technology. It's because like they're blaming the technology, but it's not necessarily the technology, it's more practice, right, of how you write and structure your code base. So it's like I've seen this just recently happen with a team I was working on that I was really frustrated with, because my lead was all over the place and we barely had a lot of these things that I just mentioned. And then he started blaming the technology and wanted a new technology. It's like, okay, you get a new technology, but all your practices are going to go to the new technology. So eventually, you're going to run into the same problem. So it's very fundamental. Like, some things are very fundamental, no matter what technology you use. The reason why I don't like Java is because Java, I came from a scripting language, like PHP is scripting. Java is compiling. It compiles and then you need to be like in Eclipse, and like Eclipse has like 1,000 buttons, you know. And then there's like these jar files. It's like very complicated just to get it like up and running. Whereas like in JavaScript, I can see everything. I'm in control of everything. There's minimal configuration compared to Java, right? And it's a lot more straightforward and simpler. It's much more simpler. So that's what's been happening now. Like, everyone's been seeing this and they've been adopting like Node.js more and more. The other thing too is
that's like, something you can should take a look at sometime if you're in your spare time.
Yes. Yeah. I think when I graduated here, Node.js had just came out. And then I really loved it. I started like doing it on my own time, because it's different, because it's JavaScript, but it's like in a server, right?
Right.
And the reason why that's different is because it's always synchronous. In the web, you deal with a few asynchronous operations. Like you make an HTTP request, and then, you know, like the AJAX stuff. So you make an HTTP request, then it comes back, and then you deal with that data, right? Whereas in Node, every operation is like that. Everything's asynchronous. So it's like, it's hard for some people to grasp. But it's really just JavaScript. Like, that's the runtime. It's just JavaScript. So if you really understand JavaScript, then Node is not really going to be a problem, because it's just running JavaScript. It runs on the V8, which is the engine of the Chrome browser. But I love it. And then the cool thing about Node too is that I can have like multiple instances of Node running in a machine, and they can either listen to a port or not, right? Like they can just execute scripts. Like I can do very low level things. I can like, with Node I can parse like through all these files. And, you know, I can create folders and I can talk to databases. And then if I want to, I can serve and create a server and serve whatever I want to serve. So it's been really adopted, even like by the big companies like Oracle, MySQL. Like if you're a serious player, you're gonna do something for Node, because it's just been super adopted by the development community, and it's cool. It's really nice. I love it. And if for web development, it's I feel like it's the best tool out there right now. If you're doing like heavy computation that takes a lot of CPU power and things like that, then you might not want to use Node. You want to use something else. But even then, like what we have, even in our code, in our tech stack, we have like things that have been working for years now that don't need to be updated. They run in Java and things. And then we have another layer in there we kind of write our code. And then we kind of just execute calls to these what we call buses, right? There are still like legacy code that you don't want to kind of change.
It's working, don't break it.
Yeah, it's working, so we don't have to break it. But we can have another layer, right? Where development is always kind of changing. And that's why Node is kind of good, because it's lightweight, it's fast, and you can get, you can do a lot. Right? You just have to write code. You don't have to worry about the call, the southern dependencies and stuff. So that's been my main tool now.
So what's a good source if you wanted to learn Node.js? Do you know any books or any...
Yeah, that's a good question. The way I learned was like just by using a lot of Express.js and like simply just trying to write like a server, like just create a server, simple server. But there's so much code out there now. The way I've always learned is like I piggybacked off of a simple project and then I created like my own kind of thing. But there's plenty like that. I like, there's sites like Udemy.com. That's a good website. You can buy a whole course for like $10.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a good one. And they have like really in-depth things, and they have like courses, in-depth courses, but they also have shorter courses. So it's up to you, like, what you want to do. The Udemy.com?
How's that spelled?
Udemy, like Udemy.com. Yeah, that's a good one. But there's so much online that it's...
U-D-I what?
U-D-E-M-Y.
I've actually been there, but I...
Yeah, Udemy.com.
Still can't spell it. So...
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. They also have, like, AWS certification courses there, which are pretty... They're not very expensive. And that's also something you guys can try. Because you can go, like, there's so... The reason why I'm saying that they have, like, specific courses for some certifications that you can then watch, and then just go and take the certification. The certification's, like, $150 or $200. But guess what? Like, if you have an AWS certification... That's extremely valuable right now in the industry, because people, like a lot of these companies, they're moving away from their data centers and they're all going to the cloud, what they call the cloud. So, that just means like, here's all my stuff, I don't want to deal with it.
That's the Amazon Web Services, AWS.
Yeah, AWS, yeah. So you can like, so then there's AWS, which is like the biggest one right now because I've been doing it for years, right? So that just means like you're still writing your backend code, but you kind of just giving it to these guys and they'll host it for you. And then they deal with like expansion and the number of users, and those are all things that you then don't have to worry about, which is awesome. Like, who wants to worry about that stuff? And then so Google's kind of doing the same. Then there's also Microsoft Azure, which is also a big player. But I would say, like, everyone kind of, you know, AWS is kind of, like, the default for most developers. And we've kind of, we've actually been leveraging within our team. We've been using Lambdas and S3s, you know, these things. And we obviously use Amazon Lex, which is, like, which does the natural language processing and natural language understanding that we use.
Is the certification you're talking about?
Yeah, so and you can also search Udemy, also has those courses.
And then Node.js was the other one you were talking about. I might as well take pictures of these.
I would say Express.js.
Okay.
Yeah, because Node.js is good, but Express.js kind of provides you with the...
Okay.
The server and RESTful, it's all RESTful, right?
There's all those playing around with Angular. It's, you had to download like a package for Node.js through the NPM.
Yeah, NPM is the Node Package Manager. So, what I would say, I don't really like Angular, I think it's too bulky, it's too too opinionated. Kind of gets away. It feels like a lot of a bunch of Java guys developed a front end framework. I like Backbone, but Backbone's old school. But Backbone is the best way to like learn Backbone, learning that, because Backbone is very object oriented. But now like the new thing is when React is really popular. Yeah, that's the one.
No, that's there we are.
This was written.
Now, what did you say the next one was?
React.
React.
React was written by Facebook. Just do React. Yeah, see right there. That's the one. That one is becoming, that one's like really popular. Oh, and there's also Vue. Vue is also very popular. Vue is nice because Vue is actually, reminds me of Backbone. But it's newer. Yeah, Vue.js. No, it's a V-U. Yeah, right there. Vue.js. So this one is also very popular right now. It's very simple, simplistic, and it actually...
And these are all working off JavaScript.
Yeah, it's all JavaScript. But this is a front-end framework. And then it reminds me of Backbone a lot. Backbone hasn't really been used, so if you want to learn something new that's actually picking up a lot of steam, Vue.js, and it's very easy to do, like, DOM manipulation. It's very kind of simplistic, which reminds me a lot of Backbone. So I feel like Vue is kind of the way to go. And it has good things from, like, React and Angular, because it has, like, data binding, but, like, simplistic in a sense, like, React. So I'll go with this. And then Node, yeah, Express. If you learn Express.js, you learn Node, because Express is like the server. Yeah. And then the only thing we have to keep in mind is that Node.js is asynchronous. So the other thing I would say would be to learn how to use, if you're trying to learn Node, use async await, if you want to search for that.
That's built in. Spell that for me?
Yeah, so async.
A-S-Y-N-C.
Yeah, / await.
There it is.
There you go. So this has been built into JavaScript now, and this helps with dealing with asynchronous operations. So it was just released like sometime last year or the year before with ES7. So right now we're on ES8 and we're going into ES9. So ES basically just stands for ECMAScript, because that's the real name of JavaScript. It's not JavaScript, it's ECMAScript. And then, so JavaScript has been really popular, so they have a lot of people from like these, you know, big companies like Mozilla, you know, guys who really know the language and really know how the engines work. And then they kind of, they've been expanding the language and making it better as time goes on. So every year they do a release in the summer. So right now we're on ES8 and we're going to ES9 pretty soon. And this introduction here was awesome, because this makes, if you look deeper into it, it just makes your asynchronous operations synchronous. You can kind of read them. It's very cool, very cool. It makes writing JavaScript a lot cleaner, a lot better. Yeah, and then the other thing you're going to have to, if you really go into it, into development, and so you're going to have to learn how to get around the terminal, and primarily like Linux, because most servers are Linux based, you know. Some servers still running on Windows, but even Windows is adopting Linux more and more, especially now with the introduction of like containers, containers, it's like what Docker uses. So basically, you can kind of contain your whole environment in what is called a container. But containers are all Unix-based, so they're all Linux-based. So learn, like knowing, having some, you don't have to be a whiz in Linux, but knowing how to get around the terminal and things like that becomes very helpful, very useful. But these things, a lot of these things, they just come with experience. So,
you know, so does the Linux course. I think Janelle introduces it at the end of 121, doesn't she?
Yeah.
No. We didn't do it.
Didn't? Okay.
But then she goes over a different kind from the beginning, but that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Syl teaches the Linux course.
I think so, yeah. You should definitely do that one. The Windows, the one that Aruda does, right? Professor Aruda. That one's really nice, but it's more like for really a network administrator. When it comes to a developer, you're gonna have the knowledge of administering a Linux server is more valuable in a way, right? Or like not fully administering it, but understanding how to get around and like how the users work and the permissions on files and things like that, and how to get around the server and how to configure environment variables and things like that. Yeah, I'm no whiz, but I know how to get around.
Okay.
I've met some guys who are really good, but some of them that were doing that, they're doing more like Linux administrator before they became programmers and things like that.
Yeah, no. I mean, Syl has done Linux for so many years. So
yeah.
It's just second nature to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, it was a couple years ago when you graduated, but did you have any resistance going into the job market with just an associate's compared to someone who has a bachelor in computer science? Was that
the yeah, that's a good question. Quite honestly, you might have some of that, but it's nothing that 1 or 2 years of experience won't debunk, right? Once you have 1 or 2 years of experience in a hot job market, that's really like all you need.
Well, what about the first job?
The first job, then you're going to probably start off with kind of like what I did, you know, something that pays really well, but it all depends the location. Where are you looking for this, right? Where are you looking for it now? Because if you're going to look around here, like, they have some opportunities, but they also have more to choose from, right? If you're going to go closer to Boston or a harder job market, then they're just taking, they'll take whoever, right? Like, I've met people with, like, design degrees, and they knew a little bit of Angular, and then they were getting offered jobs. People were all over them just because they had Angular on their resume. So it all depends on the location. But you might also get some resistance, but it also depends on, you know, how well you're doing the interviews, if you got some side projects, and they really know that, you know, like you're a programmer, right? The issue that I've had working primarily in the front end is that you meet a lot of people with, like, English degrees who end up becoming programmers. To me, like, I'd rather have someone with an associate's degree in programming than someone with, like, a master's in philosophy, you know, like that, because I've worked with a lot of people who did something completely different, and then they just started becoming programmers because of pays and the hot job market, but they never, quite honestly, lived up to my expectations. So I'd rather have someone like who just likes to program, a high school guy who likes to program been like getting around computers, right? Like a computer geek, right? So I feel like that is more valuable than having someone who comes from a different background who starts doing programming. So, but I wouldn't get hung up on like associates or bachelors. If you if you can go for a bachelor's, go ahead. But within, I feel like within an associate's degree, you can easily get in the workforce. It also kind of depends the location. But we live in a day and age now where they just need programmers. It's plain and simple. They don't have much to, they can't sit down and be like, oh, you know, like ponder upon your qualifications that much.
So. You've worked for how many different companies?
I worked, well, when I got my degree, I worked one job, I worked for four. Five, not with Fidelity, but one was like a very short stay because I went to Staples. Staples.com, I worked at Staples.com. Staples headquarters is in Framingham. And Staples.com is like the second biggest e-commerce in the world. I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Yeah, so they're behind, like far behind Amazon, where they are the second e-commerce. Because they do Staples.com, Staples Advantage, and then they have another company in Canada. What happened there, I was on a three-month contract to hire, and it wasn't for me. It was like all Java, and it was very sloppy. Like, you could see, like, I was like, you could just see it. It was like a very sloppy culture of development. They were kind of just, it was just kind of, I felt like I was working in a factory. Pretty much, it was just, we're all like in an assembly line. So I was like, no, I'm out of here. So then I left there and I went to Fidelity, and now I've been at Fidelity for 4 years and a couple months. So it's all part of the journey, I feel like. If you stay in your job for too long, like, I don't know. The only reason why I would stay in a job for too long is because they have new benefits and they pay well. That's true. And then, or they're like a big company, and then you can like, okay, I'm kind of tired of this, I'll go do something else. And then they have positions and they have other teams they're taking, they're growing, right? So you can kind of go from, that's the cool thing about working such a big company. So yeah, I left one team and then I went to another, which was more interesting things that I like, yeah. So you can do those bilateral moves. Yeah, but yeah, so I feel like I wouldn't get hung up on the whole associate's bachelor's thing. If you can go for a bachelor's, go ahead, you know, it'll be extremely helpful. And actually, it opens more doors if you're trying to look for a job. But having an associate's won't stop you from getting a job. And like I said, a lot of these things that we do on a day-to-day basis, you learn at work. Have to like build a proper foundation, like have that proper foundation of fundamentals and basics, and these are also things that you learn, you know, through your own research and through your own time at work and through guidance, through mentorship by other people.
Anything else, guys?
What did you do as soon as you left here? Like, did you know what companies you wanted to apply for?
No, I kind of just went, I was doing physical labor and I was like 6 months to graduate. I had like one or two courses, so I had some time in my hands. So there was these people in East Province were looking for someone, and then Priscilla appointed me. She had also appointed me to a really nice company, a software company, but they were kind of far and I was taking like four or five courses. Time and I just couldn't do it. That was like, I passed that up, but that was a good one. But then I went to work with this jewelry company. This guy actually owned like four companies. I kind of helped him build his like external marketing websites. And then, so I was there for 8 months, but then I realized, like, you know, this is not real. I'm a developer, like, I'm an engineer, this is not real for me. So then I kind of just applied for another job. And then by that time, just 8 months into the profession, like, I had a lot more people. You're going to deal with recruiters, right? So once you put your resume out there, they bombard you with calls. So just 8 months in, I was already getting a bunch of interest, and then I joined another company, and then I was with that company for like 2.5 years, I believe, or almost 2 years, I can't remember. But like, and then when I moved on, I had like double my pay in like 2 years. Like, even less than that, yeah. So, but it, I mean, it's not about money, but I'm just saying, like, that's really how the job market is. And then, so even in my profession, I have like people from IBM, recruiters from IBM like, reach out to me, recruiters from Facebook, recruiters from Amazon, like all the big names except Google. Google won't come after you unless you're really good or like you've got to go after Google. But all the other companies, I had them like Amazon was like, oh, why don't you come? We're doing this thing in our Cambridge office. You should come check it out. And then we're going to talk about how our Lex thing works. And I was like really interested in it. Like, so I went in the Cambridge office. And I took another coworker with me. Let's go check it out. They're going to have food and beers afterwards. So when they were done, they were like, we're hiring. You should all apply. I was like, oh, okay. So that's what I mean. You know, I have an associate's degree from a community college, and they're all trying to hire me.
Got another question for you. So how come you didn't take that job when they explained Amazon Lex?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what happened was, it's just life, you know? Like, you kind of, I feel like sometimes you're just comfortable. This is what I tell some of my coworkers too. Like, sometimes with a job, it's like, you're kind of really just, like, going, it's like having a girlfriend, and then you gotta change, like, you replace that girl for another, you know?
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's like, do you really want to get rid of this girlfriend? So that's kind of like the way I think, that's really what it comes down to, you know? It's more complicated than that. And then there's also, like, even though they're, like, trying to interview me, it doesn't necessarily mean I'll pass the interview process, right? That's another thing. So it's like, you got to, like, also realize that a lot of these companies, they have tough, some of them have tough interview process. But I even did ask, like, at Amazon, they were like, no, like, an interview, we're really cool. We actually give you preparation, like, we give you all the things we want you to kind of, like, you know, what we're going to ask, we're going to prepare you for the interview, which is really cool. I was like, that's amazing.
That is.
Because it makes it makes sense. It's like, what I hate is like, when I go into interviews and then they have you all these gotcha questions, you know, programming gotcha questions. I'm more of like, I'd rather give you, or like, weren't you cold and I watched? That doesn't make any sense. It's like, I don't cold people watching you. What makes you,
all right.
Like, you know, it just makes you a little, like, you know.
Some of the best advice my father gave me when I was looking for a job was to apply to a bunch of companies I didn't want to work for.
Yeah, yeah.
And just go through the interview process with a bunch of companies that I really didn't want to work for.
Yeah.
And get comfortable with the whole interview process.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's what happened to me on when I was here in East Providence looking for a job in Boston. I went to a bunch of interviews, and at some point I was like, sharp, you know? And then I would agree with that. So if you want a particular job, if you have something in mind, go to a few different interviews before you actually apply to that one. Or, like, if they provide you documentation on what the interview will be like, then you kind of study that. But I would say, the best thing, they're interviewing you, but you gotta interview them, you know what I mean? That's really, like, especially as you get more experience in your career, it's like, it's a two-way street. Because, right, I want someone, so a guy, like, comes in, or, you know, he or she comes and interviews me, and is more concerned with how I structure code, and how I look at things architecturally, that's someone I want to work with. Because when you're, like, when you hung up on the little things, like, oh, like, how do you make this more high-performing for me? Like, can you solve this calculus problem? It's like, what do you, like, you hire a mathematician or you hire a programmer, you know? So it's like, the way they interview has a lot to say about them and what the position is like. They also got to know that, like, what position are you applying for? But I like someone who actually looks at your resume and is able to distinct your, you know, and look at the things you've worked on. I feel like you get a lot more from that than just a few programming, like, puzzles.
Hello with the first job.
Yeah.
Well.
I'm sure the first job is like a whole programming puzzle in itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Alright, so how do we apply everything we learned to this?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's 42, so we ended up using up the class. So I'm going to talk fast next time, because I want to go through the first set of array things, which we got halfway through, and the second set. So I'm going to talk fast, so download those two. Okay. But that was good.
Yeah.
A chance to... So now you don't have to come to the...
No, appreciate that. Thank you.
11 o'clock. Because I'm trying to think. I don't think anybody else... I think you're the main one we talked about with. Ben Tagano is coming, and he's a programmer. So if you're interested at the 11, he's going to talk. And James Simos is in networking, and I think...